Hi, Mark and Amy. Jim Daly here, along with John Fuller.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for joining us for the Focus on the Family broadcast to discuss how our different love and attachment styles can affect our marriages and relationships. Learning to communicate well in marriage isn't easy, but it's so rewarding. Along with Mylan and Kay, you two showed your vulnerability and candid advice, which made a big impact on our listeners.
In fact, congratulations on that interview being part of our Best of 2025 program.
Yeah, and thank you again for making this broadcast such a success, and we wish you both God's richest blessings in 2026.
Okay, in today's group session, we're going to be talking about emotions and how we can process.
I don't have any emotions. I'm fine.
Stop avoiding the issue. Let's do what the counselor says. Maybe I should take charge of this session.
Whatever you want. I don't care.
Okay, calm down, everyone. We can get along. And look, I brought cupcakes.
I thought this was going to work, but it sounds like a waste of time.
Well, maybe you can resonate with some of those comments. Whenever someone says, let's talk about our feelings. Now, despite how awkward that conversation might seem, it really is important to understand how and why we respond to each other emotionally and relationally. And we're going to be exploring that, especially in the context of marriage today. Thanks for joining us for Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
I think I'm up for the cupcakes. Let's go, cupcakes.
Yeah. Add me a cupcake.
That always solves problems, yeah. Right? Hey, John, this is a good topic. It sometimes is a tough topic. Maybe husbands tend to back up a little bit. We're going to talk about early childhood attachment issues and how they usually blossom then as an adult. And that shows up in your marriage a lot. Like those trigger things.
Yeah,
that
you
happen.
Meant your marriage, John, right?
Yeah, no, I meant my marriage, John. But, you know, this is one of those topics. We're going to go a couple of days here and talk with some excellent guests about those triggers. Mm-hmm. How We Love is the name of the book. And you will be familiar with two of our guests today.
Right. Mylan and Kay Yurkovich have been here a number of times, always popular guests. And they do talk about this love styles concept that they've developed. They've been involved in marriage counseling for decades and specialize in attachment research. We also have Mark and Amy Cameron here. Mark is a licensed marriage and family therapist. Amy works as a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. And for the past several years, Mark and Amy have been working with the Yurkoviches in the ministry. So today, the basis of our conversation is a book that we've talked about before here. It's always good to revisit. How We Love, Discover Your Love Style, Enhance Your Marriage. And this is an eminently practical, helpful book for you. Get a copy from us today at FocusOnTheFamily.com.
Mylan and Kay, welcome back. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Jim.
It's so good to be here.
Yeah, Mark, Amy, welcome for the first time. Good to see you guys. We have a table full.
A full table,
for the YouTube watchers. They can see this is packed. This is like Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Where's the kids' table? I'm going to go hang out.
No cupcakes.
No cupcakes.
We'll go with some pumpkin pie. Mm-hmm. Who knows? That's coming. Mylan, let's start with you. We want to get into the individual stories, each of yours in a minute. But let's start with key terms that we were talking about, like emotional attachment and what you've termed our love styles. What is emotional attachment? How does it translate into how we react or interact with other people?
We were made in the image and likeness of God. And so we resemble God in comparison to all of the rest of creation. And we have two parts to our being, a logical, thinking, linear side. We also have an emotional side. Our God is an emotional God. He is also a logical and linear God. So being made in the image and likeness of God, we have the capacity to think and feel. Now, often in our society, in our schools, in our work, we don't acknowledge feelings and emotions very much. We hardly acknowledge them at all. But God wants us to be able to do so. And in our relationships, we're supposed to be people who can access and have emotional intelligence so we can describe our inner selves as Jesus did the night before he died when he said, "My soul is distressed to the point of death. Come watch and pray with me."
Mm-hmm. It's so true and so good. And we pay little attention to it, actually. And you guys are so brilliant, really, at identifying those things, usually that take place in our childhood, that shape these attitudes mm-hmm. that we have. Kay, you've identified several love styles. Take us through the list and just give us a quick definition sure. of each so we have some common glossary here.
All right. So there's five love styles. The avoider is a detached person. They don't know feelings and needs. The pleaser is someone who is always wanting to make everybody happy. Harmony is their key word. But when it comes to difficult emotions or especially conflict, they avoid that as well. Avoiders avoid conflict, so do pleasers, but for different reasons. Avoiders avoid conflict because it might get messy with emotions. Pleasers are fearful of conflict. Then we have the vacillators. Vacillators are ambivalently attached. They feel like very idealized in the beginning and excited, but easily disappointed. So when vacillators get disappointed, they protest. And then you have people who were raised in just very difficult homes, and they would fall more in the category of the controller or the victim. And these people have a lot of trauma, and our heart really goes out to them. The controller controls because their homes were so unpredictable growing up that they need to have control for predictability. And victims learn to tolerate the intolerable, and so they feel the intolerable is quite normal to them.
Oh, that's amazing. The in that context, I mean, that's what the book is filled with, are those examples and then how we interact with each other. Mark and Amy, let me get you in here. I want you to explain this statement. I've kind of alluded to it, but this is it. And this might be the question. Most marital problems don't originate in marriage. They originate from your family of origin.
Well, so everything that we know, we have learned from somewhere. And everything that you've learned has been taught to you. You've had a teacher. So everything that we know about emotions and about relationships, we've had teachers. And our first teachers are in our families of origins. They are our parents. And so they teach us, how do we learn how to recognize our emotions? And how do we learn how to link emotions to needs? Every emotion has a need. If I feel misunderstood, then I need to be understood. If I feel unheard, then I need to be heard. So here's a definition of emotional intelligence for you. Emotional intelligence is understanding what emotions are driving my behaviors to get a corresponding need met. And so we learn in our families of origin, if those things are recognized and attended to. So for instance, using those examples I just gave you here, if I don't feel heard, then maybe I need to raise my voice to be heard. So that's the behavior. Or maybe I realize I'm not gonna get heard, so I just go quiet and I just shut down. And now when we get into marriage, those things start to play out again all over because we just do what we've learned to do.
Yeah, Amy, you guys refer to this as like dance steps.
Yes.
So how does that resemble a dance step?
Well, Mylan and Kay coined the term attachment core pattern therapy. So there's attachment research, but what they did with the research was how their attachment styles dance. So the avoider pleaser, what does conflict look like for them? For the vacillator, what does conflict look like for them? And so the dance patterns are very different because you have this attachment style over here that doesn't really like conflict. And then you have this attachment style that's not afraid to step up to the plate and, you know, confront. So learning, learning the dance of my own reactivity really helped me because, you know, reactivity, you know, we think of our nervous system going into fight or flight. I had to realize, hey, like when I'm angry, like what's underneath there? And usually there's an unmet need that you can link back to childhood. And it's nice to be able to flesh that out with your spouse and develop empathy as you dance together.
Yeah, no, it's good. I kind of referred to that as the triggers. You know, we do a lot of counseling here at Focus,
yes.
And we have caring Christian counselors for couples
to call us. Right.
But we get so capable in a marriage to push each other's triggers. And then I don't know why we find that useful, but somehow it just continues to repeat itself, you know, in these patterns of behavior. So we keep pushing triggers. Kay, let me jump to you, and you guys can answer that if you'd like to in the way that you answer these other questions. But I want to ask you, Kay, you're a classic avoider. This is in the book, so I'm not disclosing something.
Some we talk about wife it very out openly. There's,
how could you say that about her? You're an avoider.
Yes.
Describe the avoider, how those things were learned, the environment that you had, and then how that led into some conflict for you and Mylan.
All right. Well, I grew up in a home that never once talked about feelings. If I got mad, my dad said, you better stop crying or I'm going to give you something to cry about. If I was sad or if I was mad, he got madder still. My mom got very anxious around emotions. So avoiders learn to shut down emotions. They're not well received. They're not entertained. They're not sought out. And in fact, sometimes they cause difficulty in my family. So I learned to shut down emotions. And if you, like Mark said, if you start to shut down emotions, you shut down needs as well, because they link together. So avoiders become independent. My family valued responsibility. They valued productivity. If there were any accolades, it was for getting some job well done. And so when I married Mylan, this was very normal to me. The avoider attachment isn't, I didn't have a lot of empathy because empathy comes from another person giving you empathy, giving you comfort, seeing a distressed feeling or distress in your life and seeking you out and asking you to put words to that. So I didn't have words for my inner self. If you asked me what I felt, I said, what all avoiders say, fine.
Let me ask you, with friendships, just to add that lesser intimate quality in here, would they have described you as kind of cool emotionally? You know, I don't know that I feel attached to Kay. I'm just trying to describe what those friendships might look like to help people.
I think the avoider attachment goes across the board. I think friends would have described me that way. I think that avoiders, if you don't know how you feel or you don't entertain your distress or learn to process with people what you're going through, then you're not going to think to do that with another person. You know, I didn't think, well, John might be having a hard day or he doesn't look too good. I think I'm going to ask him about it. And it's like, he'll figure it out. He's fine.
Right. That's the cool, cold part I'm talking
about. Yes, it is.
You're cerebral, you're thoughtful. But come on, you're 14. It's time to figure this out.
How about when you're three? You know, you don't need that night-night blanket anymore.
Right. So it feels stiff.
It didn't, but I didn't know that because that was normal and natural to me. So Mylan would say things to me like, well, you're not very affectionate. Well, avoider homes are not affectionate. Or, you know, you seem to close down conversations. And I could hear these complaints, but I had no understanding of where they came from or that this was how my family trained me. And when I started to read through attachment and the research that was done, I realized you aren't an avoider just as a child. You grow up and you still have these traits and people still respond to them in ways that hurt relationships.
Yeah. Mylan, let me ask you, I want to make sure we get this out on the table and anybody else can jump in on this, but you know, someone's listening as a Christian going, this sounds a bit like, you know, psychobabble, you know, get in touch with your feelings. But this is the stuff we need to know is what is true, what has happened. And I think in people, going back to your opening comment about the Lord's emotion in the Garden of Gethsemane, he was perfect. I mean, he could function in every direction. But in our sin state in this life, we have deficits.
We do. And I don't call it psychobabble. I call it God babble because God invented our emotions.
Right.
Now, we're going to either be in touch and learn how to be emotionally intelligent, or we're going to ignore that aspect. A lot of churches, a lot of organizations, including myself once upon a time, we gave no thought to the relational aspects of our being, which includes emotional intelligence. So it's not psychobabble. This is a research, if you will. There should be a class for everybody that goes in the ministry on sheepology.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, sheepology.
I like it. Yeah. I agree with you,
because,
by the way.
Because the sheep that walk into our churches, well, who are they? You know, what are their traits and characteristics? What are their strengths and deficiencies? A lot of pastors are emotionally avoidant. So they're going to teach, you know, right out of their left brain.
Right. But black and white.
Black and white. This is what it says. And they're not going to be able to relate with people on an empathetic basis. Mm-hmm. And that's where people hurt.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. I just want to make sure that got out there, because oftentimes that will be, and it's not a lot, but that's the criticism.
Oh, I agree. We've heard that.
Yeah. And I have to say, it's just not psychobabble. It's the observation. It's 80 years of attachment research. And it's about the human condition. It's about sin. Right. It's about places that have fallen short of the glory of God. This is an area we had to take to the cross to say, Lord, my fearful pleaser side is not working here in this relationship. Her avoidant, dismissive side is not working. It's a bad dance.
It's crushing you, probably.
It was crushing. And to your point, Amy, it's not a dance we want to keep doing. It's a dance we want to correct so that we look flawless on the dance floor.
Yeah, that's good. They're like dance steps and they're stepping on your toes.
That's right.
Ouch, it's
not
ouch,
a, it's
ouch.
Not a good dance.
Yeah, and no, I appreciate that.
And the divorce rate's 50% in the church and outside the church.
Mm. Yeah.
And the Bible says, confess your sins to one another.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, how many times I will go and silently confess to God, oh, I shouldn't have done that. But like, we kind of need to turn to our spouse or our kids and like, I'm sorry. And like, you know, like confess right there. Like, that's what the Bible tells us to do.
Well, and even not just learning how to do marriage in a godly way, but do your parenting in a mm-hmm. godly way. I mean, that's something I tried to have my mind on. Who is Trent? Who is Troy? Mm-hmm. They're different people. Yes. How do I relate to them to give them as much full cups in these categories so that they're healthier than they would have been? And that's a great target for parents, you know.
That's love a fabulous target.
You know, fabulous love them target, emotionally, yeah. Love them in the way they need to be loved, accept them, all the things that they need. But it applies every direction, I guess, is my point. Your marriage, your friendships, mm-hmm. your parenting, when you're healthy and able to do this. Mylan, you kind of hit it, but I do want to dig a little deeper on your bent, so that pleaser mentality. Just again, describe that bouncing off of Kay's descriptions. And what does that look like day to day for a pleaser to live through life?
It's miserable.
But you're pleasing everybody.
No.
We love people like you.
No.
Well, that's true.
It's miserable because Jesus was not a fearful proximity seeker to try and make everybody smile so everybody would feel good, so everybody would have a smile on their face. You know, my nickname used to be Smiling Mylan. I would smile because if you smiled, then I would feel that I was okay.
Mm.
Because in my home, if there were no smiles, it meant trouble was coming. So my smile was an attempt to get everybody to smile so I could feel comfortable. It was for me. So when I was asking Kay, how is she? It was for my benefit. I was asking, not really for her. So her avoidance and dismissiveness, I was very keyed in and hyper-vigilant about other people and what they were thinking and feeling, because that's what I was at home. I had to see if there was a storm coming, what was the look and the mood on people's faces. Mm-hmm. And so I was constantly reading people, trying to figure out what's going on and what can I predict is going to be true for the rest of the day. So I then approached my relationship with Kay, and she's also an introvert. So she's quiet, but silence at my home growing up meant a storm was coming.
Yes, a problem.
See, a problem.
Yeah.
So it unnerved me, so I'd over pursue her. And then that would unnerve her.
Right. Thus the dance.
Thus the dance.
Yeah. There it is.
And it was a bad dance. We don't do that anymore. She's not an avoider anymore. And I am rarely a pleaser anymore. And we have such a great relationship.
But you're right, Jim. On the surface, people like pleasers because they're very easygoing and they want to take care of you. But as Mylan's saying, it's not really for your benefit. It's really for their ease.
Yeah, I say that because I think I know one. Me.
This is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly, and we've got a table full. As Jim said earlier, we've got Mylan and Kay Yurkovich here, and Mark and Amy Cameron as well. We're talking about the love styles, and I know you're going to benefit from this book and all the content associated with the ministry that the Yurkoviches have started, and the Camerons are now kind of assuming. So contact us today to get a copy of the book, How We Love, Discover Your Love Style, enhance your marriage. You'll find the details at focusonthefamily.com.
Mark, I understand you and Amy are both vacillators. I think when Kay was describing vacillators, she definitely looked at the two of you.
Yeah.
So now we're all desperate. Okay, we have avoider, we have pleaser. What is the vacillator? Because you're going to speak to it from experience.
Yeah, so let me clarify this too. We are actually in recovery right now. So Kay is a recovered or recovering avoider. Mylan is a recovering pleaser, and we're a recovering vacillator. Because here's the good news. The good news is we don't have to remain this way. But what a vacillator is, a vacillator grows up in a home where they get intermittent connection growing up. Now, sometimes that has to do with, it's very obvious. They may have parents who divorce and they bounce back and forth between custody, or they may have a parent who lives out of town and they don't see them as often. But sometimes it's a parent's job. So what happens that takes them away traveling or something like that, or they work shift work. And so the comings and the goings are irregular for a child. And so what happens for the vacillator is they get some connection that they enjoy, and then they're left to wait on connection. And in the waiting, they feel unseen, unknown, misunderstood, and they get mad. And so when the parent comes back to give them the attention, they want to pout, they want to sulk, they want to demonstrate their feelings and show the parent, I'm upset that you made me wait, hoping that the parent will pursue them and come after them and not do that again. Mm. And then they grow up, they go into adulthood looking for this consistent connection that he didn't have as a child. And when they meet someone, they are all in. They love the dating phase.
Yeah, the dating phase is good.
All about time and attention and connection.
And then, of course, when you get married, kind of the dating elements fade a little bit. Amy described that for you as a vacillator. I mean, when you use the term clingy, is that a vacillator? I don't know. Like someone in the relationship is constantly tapping you for input and affirmation and...
It could be. But yeah, timeline story for me kind of starts, you know, my parents. Unfortunately, my dad committed suicide at age 7. Mm-hmm. And at that point, my mom just kind of that disconnect happened. You know, she was connected and then, you know, kind of fell into addiction and stuff. And, you know, I kind of grew up and she kind of digressed. And so that created that imprint. And so kind of tracing back that imprint is very important because, you know, then go on to the dating phase. Like vacillators love the dating phase. Like there's focus, there's connection, like they mistake intensity for intimacy. And so they just swing into it, all into it. And I do have some pleaser in me. My grandparents were great. They raised me in the Baptist church. But at 18, it was like I moved in with my boyfriend and they're like, when's the wedding? You know, like, and that's going to solve everything, right? So I got married. But unfortunately, you know, that marriage ended in infidelity, but I didn't really know who I was at 18, and neither did he, to be fair, you know. And so I had even further disappointment. You know, I did have a beautiful daughter out of the deal, but when I met Mark, same thing. Now, I had a lot more head knowledge of box checks of like, you know, I want a Christian that, you know, applies the values, walks the walk, talks the talk. So we married, but that intensity for intimacy was there and we did not understand how to resolve conflict. Yeah. So when real life came, you know, blended family, school, all that disconnect made to wait, that created that storm again of, you know, disappointment. And so the vacillator is a great term because clinical term is anxious ambivalent. And I don't really identify myself as an anxious person, but the anxiety is being made to wait. So you go from these high hopes to deep disappointment, and that's the swing.
Yeah, and I would think in that context, that classic line of expectations is part of that. You have these expectations of high fulfillment.
So that's what the book defines as idealism.
Yes.
So the higher it is, the further it's going to fall off that pedestal.
Mark, in your context as a vacillator, and this is good, I'm sure people are going, wow, this is describing me. And that's what we want. We want you to connect with these styles because I'm sure, like anything, like love languages or Kevin Lehman's birth order, there are patterns that you guys have touched on too that are in the human race. These are God, you know, God-given. And then the things that this life corrupts in us, these are the attributes that we need to identify to have healthier, God-honoring relationships. Mark, you also, as a vacillator, you were married before too. Is that resonating, what Amy's saying?
Yeah, I'll give a little bit of my story growing up. So I grew up with a pleaser mom and a vacillator dad. But growing up, it always felt uncomfortable with my dad. He was socially awkward. He didn't know how to interact well with others or connect well with us. And it wasn't until adulthood, when a couple of my nieces and nephews were diagnosed on the spectrum, we realized that my dad was likely on the spectrum. Mm. And so even though my parents were together, when I was close to my dad, it was uncomfortable. But I longed for a dad who I could connect with. And so that's how the imprint formed in me. And so I have a similar story to Amy in that I met and married my spouse, my first spouse, very quickly. We had a child and then she left. There was infidelity involved on her part. And then I was a single dad for about 6 years. And then I met Amy and we both had two seven-year-olds at the time. And as Amy mentioned, we mistook intensity for intimacy. And we were all in that dating phase and we got married within 3 months. And then that real life settled in and we let each other down. And then the vacillator, when they get let down, they play the anger card. They get mad, they pout, they sulk, they give a demonstration of their feelings just like they learned to do when they were younger.
Yeah. So the two vacillators, the two of you marrying, I mean, that sounds like fireworks.
A volcano.
Until you can figure this out.
Yeah, that's what we call it.
Okay, we'll let you describe it. But it is that. It's volatile, is the point. So how did you even get a grip? I mean, here you are. How did that connection happen where you're going, okay, this isn't healthy? Where did that start?
Well, I think we knew that the way that we had conflict wasn't healthy, but we just didn't know how to resolve it. We didn't know how to figure it out. Both of us are wanting the other person to understand us.
And this is key, though. You both are believers in Jesus. I mean,
right.
You have that capacity to read the word, know the word. But again, like so many of us, if you're not aware and you don't put corrections into practice, you'll just be doing the same dance for decades.
Right. Well, these love styles, they're, Mylan and Kay's calling them love styles, but they're attachment styles. As Mylan mentioned, there's 80 years of research in this. And so, yes, there's birth order that can shape family dynamics, and there can be love languages, there can be different temperaments that we have. But these are really childhood emotional injuries. There's a difference between who we are and how we are. Mm-hmm. If you were born an introvert or an extrovert, that's who you are. You can't change that part of you. But attachment is about how you've learned to bond with others. That's a how you are. And that part can actually be changed about us.
And often, I'm sure we would think of that as a coping mechanism. And the more serious these issues are, the more serious those coping mechanisms become. It could be drug addiction, alcoholism, other things to cope with the pain of life. Mylan and Kay, let me come back to you. In your book, How We Love, you describe a two-faceted love style known as chaotic, the controller victim. So those are the last two. Let's describe those for the audience. Controller victim under that banner of chaos, which is interesting to me because chaos is such a term for sin entering the world. Mm-hmm. Chaos begins when sin entered the world and God's shalom is not present,
That's
his
right.
peace. So this is really intriguing to me spiritually.
Well, the controller and the victim come from chaos themselves. Many times these homes have addictions. There may be physical abuse. There may be neglect. There could be sexual abuse. But the child has no rhyme or reason to connection. In my home, if we all played the avoider game, everything went more smoothly. Or in your home, if you were the pleaser, you could sometimes win back that angry mom. In this home, nothing works. And so
it's just chaos.
It's just chaos. There's no way to predict. And there's more harm than good love lessons.
There's fright without solutions for the child.
Yes. Mm. So in that kind of a situation, the more feisty kids will grow up and at some point usually take on the dominant parent. And they will go toe-to-toe. Many times they leave home early or they're put in foster care or, there may be court-ordered things that happen. The parents may go to prison. And so the feistier kid is more likely to become the controller because they are never going to be in that one down position again. Childhood was one down, humiliation, shame, terror. So they're going to control their world. And I don't think it's a conscious thought. I think it's a response to pain.
It's an emotional response.
It's an emotional response to pain. And many times when we meet a controlling person, they don't even really know why they're so controlling. And we explain it's for predictability because your childhood had none. And then the victim is...
Well, the victim, as you said earlier, has learned to tolerate the intolerable in this dangerous setting. And they, again, were a child who was frightened but couldn't go to the parents for comfort. Mm. Because a parent who's supposed to be a comfort isn't there for them in that role. The parent is dangerous. So that's why, to your point a moment ago, Jim, that we turn to other things to comfort ourselves. This is the origin, in many cases, for addiction. If I can't go to somebody for help because we're told to comfort one another, we're told to encourage one another, we're told to provide encouragement and support and bear one another's burdens. These are all biblical mandates. If I don't have that, I have to turn to something else to make all the pain go away. So a lot of people turn to addictive elements and that are just, there's so many things available to take all that pain away.
You know, what's interesting as you're sharing this, what I'm thinking about is Jesus's compassion for people that he encountered in this place.
Yes.
You know, Mary.
Yes.
And her difficulty sexually. And it seems like he uniquely knew that these were the pitfalls of humanity because he's God.
Oh, I think God's heart bleeds for people, for children who grow up in difficult situations.
And the patterns are so predictable, and the Lord knows that.
He does, and he draws them into his church for healing. Yeah. And yet that healing, you think about it, the better your childhood, the easier your marriage. Because you got a lot of great skills to help you build a healthy relationship. The more trauma you have, or the more dysfunction in your family, the harder your marriage is going to be because you're learning a lot of things that don't work well, but that's all you know.
Yeah, that's so good. Wow, this time has flown by. Mm. And let's come back for another day and continue talking about this. I think we've laid the groundwork. And if you're saying, I'm an avoider, I'm a pleaser, I'm a controller, I'm a victim, get a hold of us. So the first thing to do is get a copy of this great book by Mylon and Kay Yurkovich, How We Love. If you can afford it, make a gift of any amount. We'll send it as our way of saying thank you. That way you're participating in ministry and you're getting a great resource to help you and your marriage. If you can't afford it, get a hold of us. We're a Christian ministry. We're going to trust others. Mm-hmm. We'll cover the cost of that, and we're doing this together. We want your marriage to be healthier. Mm-hmm. So get a hold of us. Don't worry about it. We'll send it out to you right away. And then again, we also have our caring Christian counselors here. We can do a consult with you. That's what the donors of Focus on the Family provide to take care of that. Just let us know. And we have resources, counselors in your area we can refer you to for further connection and further help. And the bottom line is get in touch with us if this is resonating with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can donate and connect with a counselor. We've got the links at our website or call 800, the letter A in the word family. Online, we're at focusonthefamily.com. On behalf of the team, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back next time as we continue the conversation and once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.
This is an area we had to take to the cross to say, Lord, my fearful pleaser side is not working here in this relationship. Her avoidant, dismissive side is not working. It's a bad dance.
It's crushing you, probably.
It was crushing.
That's Mylon Yurkovich observing that our childhoods follow us into adulthood and into all of the relationships that we experience as adults. And he and his wife, Kay, are back with us today on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly, along with Mark and Amy Cameron. Thank you for joining us. I'm John Fuller.
John, we had a fascinating conversation last time with our esteemed panel of guests, and we're talking about how our earliest childhood experiences with parental love or the lack of parental love and all the emotions that go with that, how that can imprint on us emotional attachment issues. And last time we talked about the avoider. I think people will probably self-identify with that. Mm. The pleaser, I tend to lean in that direction. Vacillator, controller, victim. And what we didn't mention last time was the secure connector, which mm-hmm. is the goal. We'll talk more about that toward the end of the program. Mm-hmm. And that would, I think our guests would say, would be more like Jesus himself.
Absolutely.
Is the secure connector, because mm-hmm. he could be healthy in all these areas. Yeah. And as we discussed last time, these styles, except for that last one, have dysfunction attached to them. And these are the things we learn in our childhood, typically, because of the environment we're in with our parents, with our family, etc. Those ramifications come right into adulthood. We talked about it being the dance and how we end up stepping on each other's toes. Mm-hmm. And couples just went, yes, that's what it feels like. Yeah. She steps on my toes or vice versa. We're going to continue the discussion today so we can give you the tools you need to live a life that honors the Lord and honors your spouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of help here, and I do hope you're able to stay with us for the entire conversation. By the way, if you missed last time, check it out online through the app. We've got a treasure trove of resources to help your marriage. That was really an outstanding conversation last time. Mylan and Kay Yurkovich are marriage counselors, and they've been speaking and writing about love styles for decades. They're joined by Mark and Amy Cameron, who've been working with the Yurkoviches for a number of years now and are kind of taking over the marriage mm-hmm. ministry. And the basis for our conversation is a superb book that is so helpful. Dina and I have copies of this at home. It's marked up.
So do we.
Go to it.
I confess.
We pass it on to friends and to children at times. The book is called How We Love, Discover Your Love Style, Enhance Your Marriage. And you can get a copy of that from us here at the ministry. Our number is 800, the letter A in the word family, 800-232-6459, or stop by focusonthefamily.com.
Mylan Kay, welcome back.
Thank you.
Mark,
glad
Amy,
to be here.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
This is fun. This is a full table. This is Thanksgiving, like we said last time. Let's kick it off here. You know, people listened last time. New people are going to be listening now. How do you sort out who am I? You do have a quiz, right? Where is that located?
Well, the website howwelove.com, and you scroll down and it's a free quiz, and it will give you an attachment imprint. And some people score high in a few different areas, but don't be discouraged on that, because it gives you a lot more opportunity to grow.
Kay, let me come your direction. You've identified two important questions that people can ask themselves about comfort and conflict. Who wants comfort? Let me see your hands. Yay! What are those two questions, and why are they so significant?
Well, we ask, do you have a memory of comfort from your childhood where a parent really could tell you were distressed? They were aware and tuned in, and however you manifested stress as a kid, and they asked you about what was going on inside so you could learn to articulate your inner self and helped you through that situation, that stressful time, to where you felt relief at the end. And if you, you know, as babies, we do a lot of relieving of distress, but we never really outgrow that need, and we all have stressful lives. So we need comfort in this world, but since I didn't get comfort growing up as the avoider, I didn't think I needed comfort. And so comfort is really essential. As Mylan said last time, it's very important so that you learn to take your stress to relationships. One of the hallmarks of a secure home is that we know how to manage stress well.
Huh.
And for the attachment styles that we discussed, each of us struggle to manage stress. I detached, Mylan pursued, vacillators protest. And in those ways of handling stress, we don't seek comfort. And comfort is a very, maybe many times, a very undeveloped skill in marriages.
Yeah.
We react rather than understand and comfort.
You know, I'm thinking of a parenting edge to all of this. We're talking about it in the context of marriage, but, you know, how to create a home environment that provides comfort, you know, so that the stress levels are down. One of the things I've talked to Jean about, and I see this with our extended family on both sides, it is really wonderful. We just feel like we have a peaceful home. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of chaos, and it's really nice. And it's not to compare with others. In fact, when those extended family members come, they'll even mention that. It's just low stress, low volume. It just works, and it feels good. And people that come can feel it.
Right.
That's a good thing.
Well, that tells me you've both grown in your relationship, and you've worked hard in your marriage, too, to create that.
But in that context, that is kind of a target to be aiming for, right?
Absolutely.
Especially in the parenting role, so we don't repeat the generational thing. We don't teach our kids how to be in trouble emotionally, and they can be hopefully healthier than we are. What a great goal.
But it's hard to do in parenting what you haven't done here in marriage.
Right.
If you learn to do this, you will be better at parenting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we have people say to us all the time, as our relationship got better, we became better parents because we learned how to connect with children emotionally. And like Mark said a little while ago, what was driving the behavior of the child right then or my spouse? So to stop instead of addressing the behavior, stopping and saying, time out, what's going on inside?
Yeah.
What are the, as you mentioned, the underlying emotions underneath all of this? That's a different approach.
Well, and I think even that question that you've asked, you know, was there a time in your childhood where you felt comforted?
Right.
As a parent, aim for that. Make sure you're asking that question now with your children.
Right.
And so if they're ever asked that 20 years from now, they could say, yeah, something. I remember when my mom stopped and said, how am I feeling? That's a good thing.
Right. It takes some self-awareness. It takes some other awareness. It takes some knowledge of emotions in yourself to guess what other people might be feeling. And then sometimes it takes courage. If you have an angry child or an angry spouse, to move towards them and try and understand, I want to understand what's making you so angry.
Yeah.
Is there a way we can talk about it where we can really get somewhere? And
yeah, that's so good. Especially the kids that are really out of control and they don't know why. Yeah.
Right.
You know, why do you behave like this at the store? Right?
Well, Mark, and I also want to clarify, this is not about getting to a place where there's no conflict or no stress at all. Every relationship has stress because people are different.
Yeah, the key word is low.
And they differ. Yeah, so if there is low stress, low conflict, that can be a sign of secure connection, but it's about how you handle stress.
That's
our emotions
good.
Welcomed?
Mark, you and Amy, you talk about the conflict you had, but you talk about it in the terms of rupture and repair. Mm-hmm. So let me ask the two of you to kind of define that rupture and repair. What did that look like in your own relationship?
So that goes along with what I just said here. Every relationship eventually has rupture. But the key to resolving in rupture is learning how to repair. Can we go back and can we have a conversation? Can we invite another person to sit down with us? And instead of arguing back and forth, I like to say that people bat the perceived facts ball back and forth. I often see this in therapy. Couples just argue about the facts. And I just say, let's just split the time in two. And one of you is going to be the speaker and the other one's going to be the listener. And you're going to really try and enter into the other one's perspective to understand what is happening inside of them.
So how did, I'm looking for an example from you and Amy. I mean, you're part of this now, so it's on the table.
Yeah, so with conflict, you know, a lot of the times, you know, there's a desire to be understood. But desire to be understood when you're activated and angry, it turns into a back forth, is anybody really listening? So instead of reactivity, we need to learn how to respond. So the comfort circle, which is in the book and on the website, it gives you a framework, listener, speaker. And that was very healing for our imprint because we have that deep desire to be understood. And so it gives you an opportunity to be heard out and to figure out what's under this reactive emotion.
Yeah.
So you can really kind of figure out what's beneath it.
And that's what we had to learn to do. We had to learn how to take turns.
Was there just this up and down, back and forth, never really found the middle ground?
Before there was,
yeah.
Yes. But at whatever you practice, you get good at. Hmm. So as we practice doing that, that became more of our new default behavior.
Amy, let me ask you this, because I think in the prep here, you alluded to it, this idea about having an argument in front of your kids. The idea that we should never do that. You know, the idea that that's just wrong at the core. Let's take it into a private area. Hey, I don't know what the disagreement characteristics are. I'm sure yelling at each other would not be healthy. But you kind of disagree with avoiding the argument in front of the kids, do you?
Well, I think kids can see what's going on in the
home. They've got
like,
good noses.
I mean, whether if you're not talking to each other, you're not making eye contact, if there's not like a warm, and in the vacillator home, like often kids can understand like something's going on, whether it's verbally or non-verbally, they're kind of attuned to that. But, you know, I think it's been really healing for our kids to be like, hey, you know what? can I have a do-over? Like, I shouldn't have said that. Like, can I walk that back, like, right now in front of them? It kind of teaches them, you know, how to resolve. So I think you should model how to resolve conflict in front of your kids.
And I think it's age-appropriate, right? You don't want to do something with a 5-year-old that you would do with a 15-year-old, obviously. And the kids, you need age-appropriate looks at what it looks like to resolve conflict in a marriage.
Well, if you don't demonstrate that, what happens is a child grows up and goes into adulthood with no skills for how to resolve conflict because in their home, they didn't see it.
Yeah. No, that's so true.
I mean, what Amy, you just said a little while ago, Kay and I do it all the time. We will say, can I have a do-over? You know, we got off to a bad start right there. And sometimes we'll sing a song to each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You were right and I was wrong. Doo-da.
Look at they kick in together. Yeah. It's pretty good.
You can tell we've done it a few times.
Yeah.
And so we will actually say, I got off to a bad start right there. I apologize. Let me start over again.
And that's even something you can do with your kids.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. They would love that.
Hey, you know what? That didn't really work. Let's have a do-over there.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest smiles I ever saw on Trent's face was when I apologized for something. He was probably 5 or 6. He had the biggest smile. I said, what are you smiling about? He goes, I didn't know parents had to apologize. What a great line.
But what a great model.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it was, I needed to. It was just, I overreacted, basically. Myla, let me ask you, in the book, How We Love, you identify 3 critical ways that couples can comfort each other. I remember talking to you about this when Gene and I were with you two. For many adults, these forms of comfort were missing and minimized, and we keep coming back to that. What are those 3?
The 3 are, number 1, listening. If I can look you in the eye, because you talked about this a little while ago, you know, Gene engaging you and wanting to look into your eyes. If I can look into Kay's eyes, and if I can see and I can acknowledge what I see, I see a tear. Tell me about that tear.
Mm.
That's comforting.
And it's connection.
It's very much connecting. Then the other thing is when we see that tear, I'll say, can I hold your hand or can I just touch you for a moment?
So physical connection.
Physical connection and touch that is non-sexual. It's very important for guys to learn how to have non-sexual intimacy with their spouse. Very important. And then thirdly, we will do a holding time where I will hold Kay as a comfort if there's been something very distressing. Mm. And we've even done that with respect to comforting one another for our childhood issues as well.
Yeah.
Nobody was with me back then, but Kay can go there back with me and I can put my head in her lap and I can receive comfort for that distressing moment in my life. Mm-hmm. So these are 3 key ways. Yeah,
many childhood wounds are unresolved. In other words, we were married for 15 years and we never really talked about what had gone on in our families and shared specific memories. And when we started to do that, it was very transformative because the thing he used to do to always be pursuing me and how are you and how are you and how are you, when I heard his childhood memories, I was like, oh, no wonder you're anxious. No wonder you feel these things. No wonder you're always wondering how I am. You're afraid that I'm going to be upset. And then we could comfort those memories as well.
Hmm. The comfort circle, you've mentioned it. Who wants to take a stab at describing it? I mean, you guys are all the experts here. So,
Mark? Go ahead.
Well, the comfort circle is providing a reparative experience for the other person. As Kay was mentioning, that what she and Mylan do together, when they look into each other's eyes, when they listen to each other, when they hold hands for one another, that's mimicking what the cycle of bonding should be like when we are growing up with a parent. And so if you didn't get that growing up, when you provide that for your spouse, it gives that reparative experience. Now, here's the good news. We're sinners. Christ died. He came down. And he provided us a way back to be sanctified. The bad news here is you may have an injured attachment style, but the good news is research shows that you can form a secure attachment style by earning it, by doing something called creating a coherent narrative. Coherent means that something makes sense. Narrative is story. If you can make sense of your story, your childhood story, and then do that reparative experience in the present, you reform, you reshape And that's part, I believe, the process of sanctification.
Mm. And I think it's important for our listeners to understand, we're not talking about this to blame our past on our parents. I think it seems like there's this trend to kind of roll my eyes and say, it's all my parents' fault. But there's kind of what was and who I am now. So address that, because I think it's important for people to hear.
Well, we have to acknowledge reality of a situation. The good news of Jesus dying for us and being a savior is of no consequence if you don't believe that you're a sinner. So the good news of being able to reform and reshape in your attachment style, if you don't recognize these areas where we have deficits and how they have formed, then you can't go ahead and intentionally make that journey toward the process of reshaping. And so this is not about blaming parents, as you're mentioning here. It's about learning how to explain what happened to us, how we became a certain way, so that we can move forward into emotional health.
You know, one of the things, Mark, in that regard, we often use the term, and I know you guys probably use it too, you know, wounded people wound people.
Yes.
And that's the dysfunctional parent. I mean, they just don't know how to do it better. And you end up doing the same things that were done to you as a child, as a parent, to your son and daughter.
Right.
And it just is this cycle that keeps repeating, void of improvement under the Lord's guidance, right? So I think that's the goal. Mylon, let me turn to you. We talked about triggers. Describe again, for the benefit of the listeners and the viewers, those triggers that were working with you and Kay. I mean, as a pleaser, what was really making it hard for you?
Okay, so the definition of a trigger is something in the present brings back an old historical feeling.
But you don't know that.
No, you don't know that. All you know is that right now, when you're triggered, that historical feeling comes slamming in to the present. It's like you said earlier, and it violently slams in, and so we get that expression you had. And where did all that energy come from? It was uninvited, okay? I didn't ask that to come in. It just jammed its way into the present. Now, what triggered me with Kay was her quietness, because of I said yesterday on the program that silence was a precursor to a storm. Number two, she's also in that introvertedness. She doesn't need to be in contact with people as much as extroverts do. So that silence and also the withdrawal made me nervous because when there was silence and withdrawal in my home growing up, it was absolutely anxiety producing. So I would then over pursue trying to make sure everything was okay. And so until she said she was okay, or until I could figure out things were okay, I was very undone. I'd be very anxious.
Now, it's interesting. I'm just projecting, but I would think that those consistent questions, Kay, were irritating to you. Like,
oh,
why does
so
he keep
coming?
So now he's out of his trigger. He's triggering you.
Yes, that's exactly right. My feeling was, he's so nice, but it bugs me. Why is that bugging me? And it took me really years to answer that, because he wasn't asking for me. He was asking to alleviate his own anxiety. The right answer was, I'm great because I'm married to you, and you're amazing, and you're the best husband anyone could ever have, and woohoo!
Yeah, and that would have been really good.
That would have been really good.
That doesn't come naturally to you.
No, no, it didn't come naturally. But on top of that, from the time I was very young, my mom and I didn't really bond when I was an infant, and she thought there was something wrong with me. And she had a very anxious relationship with me. She was always looking at me like thinking, what's wrong with this girl? And so the feeling I was getting from him was something was wrong with me, which made me want to push away. And he just felt too needy. So those triggers, you don't know they're happening until you explore your childhood and go, oh, that's the same feeling. So one of the questions our listeners can ask themselves is, when I'm annoyed, what am I feeling? What do I really want to say? And who would I say that to in my history? Or who did I have those exact same feelings with in my history?
Yeah.
And then you realize, okay, the reaction could be quiet. For me, it wasn't a loud, like, ugh. It was like, I'm going to go in the other room. So it could be a detaching response. It could be a protest. It could be trying harder to please. But these are all responses to triggers.
But that is super important. When that happens, try to figure out why it's happening.
Right.
I mean, that's a common sense thing rather than just living the emotion and then, you know, an hour later it happens again.
Right. Well, it's not just the word why, Jim. It's when.
Okay.
When have I felt these feelings before?
Yeah.
I felt them when my brother did this. I went into my room and I slammed the door. Well, I do the same thing when I'm married. You know, my husband yells, I go in my room and slam the door. When have you done this behavior before?
Yeah, interesting.
We marry each other's histories, our whole history.
Yep.
Now, Mark and Amy, you're nice and quiet over here, but we're gonna pull you into this. We want to know your triggers, too. But speak to triggers in that vacillator relationship. What are those things that Mark would do to you, Amy, that would like, ouch, and you would react out of that?
Gosh, so many things, I guess. But thankfully, like, there's so much relief, though, because, you know, you dig all this unconscious stuff up and you, like, take a good look at it and you're like, you know what? This is from my childhood wounds. And so now you look at your conflict as, like, you know, like, this is a wound from, you know, Mark's childhood when he was little, from a wound when I was little. So you really get to look at each other at where that reactivity was originally came from.
But you have to develop that empathy. Because it has to move from irritating to compassionate.
So that's a big jump. And that's what the work does, because, you know, attachment core pattern therapy allows you to see that reactivity. So, but yes, vacillators, you know, have reactivity and have anger. You take the quiz, if you score high in please or vacillator, the tiebreaker is, do you get angry? And so the answer is yes for vacillator.
So we'd love an example of how you and Mark get angry at each other.
Okay, so one thing that is practical is... arrivals and departures. So, like, you know, he's going to come home. I have all this exciting stuff to tell him, and I have dinner on the table. I'm hungry. You know, like, it's warm. It's at the temperature I want to eat it. Like, come in. Like, let's eat it right now. Like, right now. Now is a thing that vacillators do. And then, you know, he has to, like, put his jacket down and, like, his day and everything. And so here comes the swing. High hopes. He's just not listening to me at all. Deep despair. So that swing is what happens. But taking ownership myself of, you know what? I need to give him time to come through the door. If I want to be heard out, I need to find the right opportunity. You know, he listens to people all day as a therapist, so I need to give him the right opportunity for me to be heard, for him to actually listen. So just understanding, you know, how to get your needs met without being reactive.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, disappointment is one of the triggers for the vacillator. They also get triggered when they feel misunderstood, when they feel unseen or unheard by a person, when they are made to wait, when they perceive abandonments or rejection. But they don't like to ask for the connection. They give complaints and criticisms. And so that's often how it played out between Amy and I. Something would happen. Someone would get disappointed. The other person would be made to wait. And their criticism would come. And really what the criticism was, hey, I'm hurting. But the other person perceived that as an attack. And then we both went at it with each other.
Yeah, no. And that's, again, the goal here is healthy. So all these awarenesses we're talking about, this is awesome. I love this. Mm-hmm. That last one that we have mentioned but really not defined, the secure connector. Let's get into that in the last few minutes that we have here. Maybe, again, Mark and Amy, you guys can help us define what it is, those characteristics of a secure connector.
Yeah, somebody who is securely connected is emotionally intelligent. They're in touch with their own emotions to understand what's driving their behavior. And they can make requests. So we do two things with our emotions. We talk them out productively, or we act them out. Or I like to say, we verbalize or we dramatize. If you dramatize and you act it out, someone's got to guess what's going on inside of you. But if you have language for emotions and feelings, you can clearly say to somebody, this is what I'm feeling here. And if you can learn to link those two things, feelings and needs, you can make requests. You're more likely to get what you want and more likely to draw empathy in from the other person. So somebody who is securely attached can do that. They can learn to wait. They can have a conversation where they're in the listener role and they can listen for understanding even when they don't agree.
Yeah, that is good. Anybody want to add to that?
Well, especially for vacillators, when they go silent or pout or sulk or pull away, they want a mind reader to be able to know what's wrong with them.
Because that communicates what? You know me.
That means you know me.
Yeah.
But I don't.
You see, right.
I can't possibly mind read. I know Kay as well as anybody, but I still have to ask her every day, how are you?
Well, this is the wife who's saying he should know that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But he doesn't.
Right. Or the husband that says, I told you one time. I told you, already told you this. Why can't you just know what I need right now? And that's not fair because we are growing creatures and life changes from week to week. I can't possibly know that.
So I'll add to the secure connector based right off of that.
Yeah.
The secure connector can describe to their family what they're going through. You might come home and say, I had one of the most difficult days. I'm really not in a great place. It's nothing you did. Give me a while to calm down. That communicates to the family so that they know right away. Great way to come back to your family is when you reunite at the end of the day is give me three feelings about your day. It gives you so much information.
Mm-hmm. You know, in this space, right at the end here, I'm thinking of the marriage, you know, a lot of Christian marriages that, you know, we're doing okay. Mm-hmm. We pray together. We go to church together. We have good discussions. We don't allow phones at the dinner table. You know, whatever is making that happen. But it's not the deep end of the pool.
Right.
It's like we're just playing in the shallow end of life. And we're happy there because we could put our feet on the ground. And then you move deeper into the pool. It creates risk. It creates openness. It's feeling very much known. Right. And I think that is where God wants us to go so that we have a full experience in this life of intimacy, intimacy with Him, intimacy with our spouse, our family, etc. What do you say to that couple that, yeah, we're doing good enough?
I think it's about vulnerability. The first 15 years of our marriage, there was no vulnerability. We didn't even know how to be vulnerable. And then when we took this journey and really owned our own attachment wounds and began to change, we had our first very vulnerable conversations. Even discussing childhood pain is vulnerable. Learning to comfort each other was enormous, and what we're experiencing as we age, there's more and more loss. And if you're in the shallow end, you don't know what to do with loss. Loss needs comfort. And the older you get, the more loss there is. And so loss and being able to cry with someone or being able to really express grief is vulnerable. So I think going into the deep end gives you a richness that we just didn't know existed until we learned to live there.
Yeah, that is so good. Mm-hmm. And I think, frankly, I'm guilty of that. I can live in the light end. Yeah. I like to lighten up the load because life can be heavy. And that's...
I'm not talking about not having joy.
Right.
You know, but it's like most people are able to experience joy, but grief or pain is where they get stuck. They don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. Well, this is a start, and I hope this has been helpful to you. You know, this is Focus's goal. We want to kind of gently take you to the deep end of the pool and make sure your marriages are as healthy in Christ as they can be, that your parenting is as healthy as it can be. So if you're going, wow, you're describing some things here that fit my family or me, get a hold of us. We have counselors who can talk with you over the phone that can help you. Order the book directly from Focus on the Family. And when you do, just make a gift of any amount, whatever you can afford. If you can't afford it, we'll get it to you. Just call us. And if you can do a monthly gift, that's great. We can do ministry together. If it's a one-time gift, good. And I'll trust others will cover it for those that can't afford it. Just get in touch with us. Mm-hmm. We are here to help you.
Yeah, our number is 800, the letter A in the word family. And of course, we'll have the links to the book, opportunities to donate, and to connect with our caring Christian counselors if we can be of any help to you. Those are all at focusonthefamily.com.
You know, we also have Hope Restored. I didn't think to mention that. That's a four-day intensive where couples that are struggling deeply can come. We have four locations. A fifth location in Cave Creek is coming up. And so we can see about 3,400 couples a year in those locations. So if you're in that spot, we have an 80% post 2-year save rate on marriages. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling like this may be the last thing we can try, do it. Try it.
Yeah.
Let's go in together, and you can call us and talk to us about that as well.
Yeah, once again, we're so grateful to the donors and to the Lord for His goodness to this ministry that we can offer this kind of help to you. Once again, our number, 800, the letter A, and the word family. On behalf of the entire team here, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.